This is Tim Murphy. Welcome to an experiment. Alex Peppel and I are thinking of creating an Erratosphere podcast, which will allow people to listen to us. I think just about everybody who hangs out here is writing for the ear and not for the page. Generally, when I give a reading, I read poems over a broad range of my concerns. But in this case, I'm going to read a half an hour of poems that are unified in theme, in sight, and in time. They're hunting poems that I wrote this fall. Permission Granted is going to appear in Rory Waterman's new periodical in Great Britain, New Walk. Most hunters loathe asking permission to go on posted land because they regard farmers and ranchers as creatures from a different planet. Of course, having shared their risks all my adult life, I regard them as brothers, and I delight in doing so. This poem is entitled Permission Granted. Woodbury Farms. Last year's first blizzard blew brown clouds of pheasants over these fields. They flew from corn to cattails, quarters posted up, tight as the rear end on a starving pup. Seeking permission is a dreaded task for most hunters, but me, happy to ask, having a surefire trick, let Feeny out and start reciting puppy poems. Doubt gives way to disbelief and then to laughter as we gain access to the grass we're after. Blonde and blue-eyed, a boy leaps from his tractor. Redford could cast him as his leading actor in Grapes of Wrath Redux. The young man's smile lights up the pasture and the silage pile. I start out with an expert observation on the harsh facts of cow-calf operation. His father tools up on his ATV, and soon we're all chuckling at poetry. I give them Set the Plowshare Deep, my book, set in the counties where they ranch. They look at Beck's woodcuts, my clinchers, and perceive through Charlie's eyes the ghost farm where men grieve, the miracle of his snow geese. Says the son, "Sir, you'll be welcome soon as deer is done." On September 18th, the day before the opening of grouse, I was loading the car to go up to the Corwin family's historic quack college, and I sneezed and threw my back out. End of grouse hunt. I was just paralyzed with pain for quite a long period of time. So instead, I wrote The Blown Hunt. I had a sneezing seizure yesterday. Now I'm supposed to walk, but I'm reduced to talk. My lower back is in such disarray. Today my own garage seems far away. How did a simple sneeze so fell me to my knees that all my best-laid plans gang afterglay? Feeny pouts in his kennel in dismay. Picture 10,000 acres with few, if any, takers, and more targets than any man could slay. He dreams of sharptails on their bales of hay, watching the rising sun, their coloration done, or dancing little dust clouds from the clay. Back spasms went on for some time, and we had a very late harvest this fall. Late harvest makes the opening of pheasant very difficult, because the pheasants hang out in unharvested crop, which it is illegal to hunt in and impractical to hunt in. And so I was reduced to pass shooting. Now, a pass shooter is someone who sits in a duck blind and shoots birds as they go by, and they are regarded with the same scorn by a true upland game hunter whose dog has to flush as well as to retrieve, the same scorn that is reserved by the purist, the dry fly fisherman, for the guy who throws bobber in a live bait with a spin cast rod. This poem is entitled Pass Shooter, and the epigraph is from Jose Ortega y Gasset's majestic Meditations on Hunting, where he says, "Dedication is the privilege and torment of our species." 1. Sciatica, a crushed cervical disc, the torn Achilles tendon in one leg. Let me sidestep the badger holes, I beg. No gain without a calculated risk. A friend protests, "This is a young man's sport." At grave danger of pitying myself, groaning, I stretch for ammo on my shelf. I can outfox them now, is my retort. Each year, miles trudged, per pheasant cock declines, faster than does my tolerance for pain, for tangled sloughs, for blowing snow and rain. The old dog sniffs my Winchester and whines. 2. Long Tom 12, a gun for waterfowl, I haven't fired for years, is in my hand, and last night's sugar snow has flocked the land. These back spasms are killing me, I growl. Soybeans uncombined and the corn still green, pheasants will forage in these crops all day, unhuntable however hard we pray. Last night, from memory, I mapped this scene. Now I'm too lame to limp through birdless grass. Flushing from their half-darkened slough to feed, here flies the oorflock. With a canoe-length lead, I drop 3 in the ditches as they pass. Sorry, Feeny, no lurkers holding tight in cattails, no adrenaline, no rush of blood brainward as pointed pheasants flush, but fresh game for the Irish nuns tonight. 3. I'd shot 2 cocks, and Feeny saw them drop. Soybeans in rows, lanes on a running track, circled the slough as I was shouting, "Back!" And both ran scot-free through the shelling crop. 3 days later, Seardall, the wrath of God, brings in his bitches to reclaim the lost. Chased from the slough, one pays the final cost. Maggie solo tackles it in the sod. Its mate was wing-tipped by an errant shot. 3 Labradors are thinking, "Bird alive." Bet, by our clock, nearly 105, pins and retrieves, Steve says, "Waste not, want not." 4. Meditations on Hunting. Years ago, corn strips, the winter food plots in these fields, held all the birds our Olson section yields when the plowed soil is flecked with fallen snow. 2 brothers and their Labrador, foot-worn, worked to the wind. Their father capped the drive, never quite so alert, quite so alive as when his sons were coming through the corn. Arthritic, diabetic, short of breath, he'd seen the sun rise on a mallard blind, Ortega y Gasset much on his mind, his hunts were dress rehearsals for his death. Pass Shooter will appear in Gray's Sporting Journal. A couple of years ago, Sam Gwynn urged me to get to cold call the editor of Gray's, James Babb, who has 68,000 affluent hunters as his audience. He publishes a dreadful poem every month, and I told him that and sent him a large poetic sequence like this. And since then, despite my impudence, I've become the house poet of Gray's, and I am simply delighted to be reaching so many hunters instead of a handful of academics and intellectuals at Chronicles and the Hudson Review, which were my only prior markets for hunting verse. Hunting is something one wants to pass along from one generation to another, and obviously it is not my fate to have a son, but I'm teaching my young nephew Matthew to hunt, And this is a poem which will appear in Rory Waterman's New Walk, the other of the poems, entitled To My Nephew. These farms bear patronymics. Here is Mayor's, the Hammer Half, Wes Allender's. But pairs of sloughs along this rutted lane I name for a song's verses. Too old for this game, the double, Feeney's Christmas, and the blind, hunters and dogs, long dead, thronged to my mind. See where the marshes lap against the wood, capping that sea of grass. Your grandpa stood and executed birds your uncles missed. 60 yards out, we'd watch a rooster twist, fly 4 beats lung shot, fold wings and collapse, a sacrifice in a cathedral's apse. For now, Matthew, just learn to swing and shoot. In every pothole where you sink a boot, you've sunk your roots. You've cashed in memory another autumn day. You hold in fee, surer than any entry on a deed, title to skies where ghostly pheasants speed. Every year for the past 20, I've gone hunting pheasants on Thanksgiving morning. This year, the weather was so awful that not even a crazed hunter like me was going to try it. So instead, I hunted with pen and paper. This is Hunting on Thanksgiving. Thanks for my tall Norwegian hunting buddy. I love him best when his right hand is bloody from gutting out our birds. Thanks for the true friend you found me when I was 22. He flees from me, but I attach no blame to Alan, who would never clean my game. Thanks for the dog who frolics as I slog mud to my ankles through this flooded bog. Thanks for the pheasant stuffed into my vest, whose felling in these weeds was just a test of heart pounding and fouled lungs out of breath. Thanks for the priest who will attend my death. Thanks for the bird I missed, for Feeney's flush, the faint thunder of wings, breaking the hush of mass conducted in the open air. Thanks for pulling me back from the despair which might have lost me 18,000 days I have devoted to my Maker's praise. As pheasant season went on, I found myself writing heterometrical and otherwise nonce pheasant sonnets, all of them involving my friend Steve Surdahl, who is my inseparable companion during hunting season. This sequence will also appear in Gray's, and I had the temerity to entitle it Intimations of Mortality. 1. Wandering the land with a mind swathed in wool. I happened on a cockfight in a ditch, two birds with sharpened spurs slashing each other in the cockle burrs. Parking the truck, I unkenneled my bitch, who dove into the fray. The warring April roosters flew away. With both barrels, I drill a rooster cold. Half a mile out, I see him tower and fold. Lung shot, our pheasants often try to fly straight up as though to slip the surly bonds of earth, the fields that gave them and their broodmates birth, to scorn gravity and its grip, to stake a final claim upon the sky. 2. Recupery. The bandage on his neck, 4 inches long. Surgeon, you couldn't cut a 3-inch-strong basal cell carcinoma from my neck and leave me anything but an utter wreck. But here is Steve, it's cresting 8 above, thinking September, opening day of dove. 5 shells, 5 downed. He can't even turn his head, and 2 of his birds are runners, 3 birds dead. Feeney, our hero, tracks down in the grass the wing-clipped roosters tunneling in snow. Only the noses of our gun dogs know just where soon-to-be ghosts of pheasants pass. My gift, not for wing-shooting, heaven knows. I am the brother of the roadside crows. 3. Shooting coach. You've missed 3 pheasants straight. It's misalignment of the bead and eye. Line up your cheek with the receiver plate. You have to be shooting high. Now Maggie wins and points another cock. Take your time in a hurry, he quotes a legendary wing shot. Another flush, I fire, at slingshot range, feathers, a crimson flurry. The kill falls like a rock. I turn to Sirdal when in doubt, for he is Norse, the only friend who asks, when I am dangling at rope's end, do you need to be bailed out or broken out? 4. Streak or slump. A month ago I ran a 9-ball table over 2 days on cocks. Steve was unable to flush a bird. We each followed our dogs into the frozen, rooster-hosting bogs. The last 2 weekends it was Sirdal's turn. I'd hear 2 shots, then watch his birds catch fire and burn. Neither of us is truly an expert shooter. We're bloody good, but not the men to tutor rich gentlemen, being neither gentle nor rich. I trail my stud, and Steve follows his bitch through Ransom County, where there's elbow room to follow pheasants even to the edge of doom, where Steve can call me to my frozen face, a predatory poet in a state of grace. And finally, 5, willows. Do our snows give them birth as they pass? Over years, I've watched red willows grow. They emerge from the pockets of snow, from the smallest depressions in grass. When they're less than the height of the weeds, pay no mind, for no bird will be there. When they're tall, when they're flinging their seeds, send the dogs, see the birds fill the air. And I'm going to conclude this podcast with a poem called The Chase, which is actually from the pheasant season of 2008. I first wrote the second section of this tripartite ode, and a young scholar and poet named Chris Childers urged me to expand it to the size of a full-sized ode, and as the season unwound and I had more material to work with, I wrote the other 2 sections. This poem appeared in the fall issue of this year's Hudson Review. It takes as its epigraph paragraph 432b of Plato's Republic. Now then, Glaucon, we must post ourselves, we philosophers, like a ring of huntsmen around the thicket, with very alert minds, so that justice does not escape us by evaporating before us. 1. November 24th. I whirl at the faint thunder of the flush, snap off the safety, plant my back foot boot, shoulder the gun, but do not shoot. One wing flails feebly in the falling hush as the bird swerves across the frozen bog. It flaps about 5 rods, glides to the ground, leaps skyward with a second bound, foiled by the canines of an airborne dog. Here is the cock I winged 2 weeks before, its crop crammed full of leavings from the corn, its loss a disappointment born, but bird in mouth the settling of a score. The neck snapped is a mercy long deferred. When our Alberta clippers start to blow, no slow starvation in the snow, no fox or coyote will consume this bird. I bear our trophy to the truck in bliss, the proud retriever frisking at my knees. Glaucon, hunting with Socrates, could hardly have been happier than this. 2. December 8. cascading from the cropland's terraced shelf. The sidehill western wheatgrass rolls away, and the seed heads of side oats grama sway, descending to the dead end basin's shore. The closest roadhead is a mile or more. Think like a rooster, Tim, I tell myself. Black-eyed Susans have colonized the slopes, feral reminders of the sunflower fields abandoned when the weevils halved our yields. In the food plots whose flanking grasses drain to clumps of cattail topped by feathery cane, two practiced predators repose their hopes. Windward we work to maximize surprise. 4 miles into this prairie, white with hoar, Feeny pounces. Two lurking roosters soar and fall victim to stamina and stealth, weighting my vest with otherworldly wealth, a pair of cocks purloined in paradise. Contemplating the eldest of our arts, I gut the birds and feed my friend their hearts. 3. December 15th. I pick my slow way past the pockmarked sedge where calves have kicked their divots, then climb to hunt the upland's grassy edge rounding the center pivots, whose verdant verge I choose to stalk. There breakfast lies within a rooster's walk. The prairie is a poem rarely read. Its loose leaf pages blow. Too many students of this landscape fled its poverty and snow. Today I limp on stiffening knees, hoping that heedless pheasants take their ease in pigeon grasses sprung from Durham stubble, in fragrant cedar shadow where a boy watched his father down a double. Maker of marsh and meadow, grant me more time to understand, more years to walk and memorize this land. Thank you for hearing me.